Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Command Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. After 8 years, they figured it out. They figured out to yell after we say that. That was good. Yeah. So Adam and Ann here with David Niles. We are on the 8th annual Catholic Command Show campout here in beautiful Hobart, Oklahoma, at Clear Creek Abbey, and we have a very we have a returning guest, a good friend of ours, Brother Father Nesbitt.
Hello.
It's good to have you back.
Yep, it's good to be here. I'm always here, but it's good to be down at this place with you all. So,
yeah. It's actually good for us to be here then.
Yes, yeah.
Good, good, good. Yeah. So it's been a lot of fun so far. Like over the course, we have a cigar rolling class that we're going to be doing. We've had the forge right over there. George Carpenter helped us out. We have a forge set up. We've played cornhole. Not going to say who dominated that, but
why not?
it was pretty impressive, if I do say so. Okay, so hey, last episode we kind of left what's known as like a teaser at the end of the episode, that we kind of like gave them a little bit of a snippet of like what happened, and we said we'll tell the story on this episode.
Yes.
So last episode we talked about how there was a time in which Dave called the cops, 911, at the church.
And he's saying that I called 911 as if he wasn't there with me, but he was the whole time. To be fair, I did in fact push the buttons on the phone.
I was just there.
Yeah, but so people will remember of a certain age these things called payphones that used to be places. You'd go places and you'd see them. Superman used to use them for various other things. But anyway, you could put money in them and they would make a phone call. And everybody knew, if you didn't put money in, it doesn't make a phone call. And we didn't have any money.
Because we were like 7.
Yes.
Maybe
or
8.
Or so.
Ish.
And so I thought, hey, let's dial 911.
See what happens.
Because we didn't put any money in. And so nothing will happen, except Adam had the phone in his hand, and I dialed the numbers, and I just remember him looking at me with this shock in his eyes and said, "It's ringing." And I said, "What?" And then he said, "Someone's talking." And so I took it, and I said, "Hello?" And I heard someone say, 911, what's your emergency? And I just hung up the phone. And we, like, kind of ran.
We kind of like moved away from the phone very quickly.
Only to our horror, did the phone immediately start ringing. And it's like, no, what is going on? And my dad came and answered it. And it was like, oh man.
We are in trouble.
Yeah.
And our dads are here.
Oh, you see him right there.
Do you remember that, Dad?
No. He blocked that out of his memory.
Good.
Good. Good.
It was a rather scary memory for me.
Yeah, it just burned into our memories. Yeah. So we learned that day, though, that you cannot, like, you don't actually have to have money to call 911.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. It does. So anyway, so that was the story we said we were going to tell.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure we did that. So, Father, how's everything going at Clear Creek? You guys are experiencing your 25th year anniversary upcoming?
Yes, that's right. We were founded in 1999, and the official inauguration, though, was in February 2000 with Bishop Slattery, who just passed away, and we had his Requiem Mass yesterday. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're very special, and a lot of you were there. And so, 25 years, and we've grown from 13 original monks, is a kind of traditional number for a new foundation where you have the superior in the place of our Lord, and then the 12 disciples, the apostles. So 13 monks were sent over here in 1999, and now we have somewhere in the mid-60s. And we'll have a couple of events for this 25th anniversary, main one being next year after the official inauguration date. So, yeah, we're doing well.
What will you do to celebrate?
I don't know.
Mass?
Yes. Yes,
absolutely.
Yep, and then maybe a talks, presentation, pictures, banquet, some sort. Yeah,
some kind of feast.
Yes,
banquet sounds like...
Yeah, that's probably a bit overdone of term, but we will serve food.
Yeah, when I think of a banquet, I think of like a king with like an obnoxiously huge fireplace with like a whole tree, like just the massive like.
Really?
That's what I think of. Yeah, that's what I think of.
Is there any update on what's happening with Blessed Zita? Maybe unpack that a little bit, because maybe people don't know that you guys are...
Yes, so the wife of Blessed Charles of Austria, the last Habsburg emperor, was also a very holy woman. You know, they raised, I don't know how many children, you know, 7, 8, 9... And then he, of course, died early, and she had to raise all those children. A few of them became nuns at St. Cecilia's in France, next to the mother house of the whole congregation, Salem. And she herself was an oblate of that convent. So she has a close tie to our congregation, the Congregation of Salem. And so Salem is promoting her cause for beatification. We've taken that up here in the U.S., and so at least every year around May, the anniversary of her death, we'll have a mass and some talks and events. So it's in the initial stages right now, but we're promoting that cause. And it'd be a fitting, you know, to have the two who were joined in marriage to be raised to the altars together. But so far, yeah, Blessed Charles and now Zita.
Yeah. A servant of God, right? Is she?
Yes.
Is she at that level?
I do not know.
Okay, I think so, but I could be wrong. But the beautiful thing about that, like, how unique is it that not only are they, you know, their cause has been open for, you know, for canonization, not only as a married couple, but right there's also a political aspect to that, right? So the idea of having a saint in a political atmosphere is almost kind of a foreign idea, at least in my mind.
Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately so, because, I mean, you'd think that you would have to acquire moral virtue and be able to rule yourself before you can rule a whole nation. So we do need that example of holy rulers.
Yeah, now we just look for people with nice hair.
You know, I'm not too exposed to the news and media, but I'm not sure Donald Trump has nice hair. Or Kamala Harris. But like I said, I don't know when the last time I've seen a picture of
either
of them. You know
what? That's a good comeback. I think it's... Although, he's got better hair than I do, unfortunately.
Cool. Okay, so that's the
I guess I'll never be a politician.
All right. So Father, one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is perception versus reality. Or at least I wanted to pick your brain on this. You know, I'm sure that, or let me start off this way. When I first was pursuing Lady Haley, and we were, you know, I was courting her, and we were discerning the vocation of marriage. In my mind, I had this idea of what marriage was going to be, specifically with this woman, and how great it was going to be, and it was always going to be. Just there was not going to be any problems. There wasn't going to be, like, we were all going to be on the same page on absolutely everything. That I had this perception of what marriage is, and then like reality happens, and you realize, oh, we are two different people raised by two different families with two different, you know, with different traditions, different like we're two different people, right? And so the perception of marriage was one idea, and then the reality of marriage kicked in. In reality, set in,
yes.
Which is actually it's beautiful. It's bliss. But I'm sure that the same idea happens with in the monastic life, right? When you first come into the novitiate and you're discerning to become a monk, you have this idea of what being a monk is, and it's maybe this, especially this type of monk, you know, because it's I would say a strenuous life, like it's arduous. It's an arduous life compared to other.
It's stricter. You could say maybe it's stricter.
Yeah, it's got to be a little. Yeah, it's a little bit more strict. Because you know, it's not like a. Like it's not like you're.
So the question is.
I should. I was about to get myself in trouble. I don't want to.
Did you go through a period of disillusionment? Is that common?
I would say it's not
for your vocation.
There is often an element of that. Because as you say, we have our ideas of, you know, what this will be like, but the reality, you know, is there. And so I guess personally entering the monastery, I said, I don't know what, you know, being a monk is. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to show up and do what they tell me to do. And
that docility is very, yeah. Very helpful in a monastic life.
Yes. So
it also works in marriage.
My dad often does say, as his marriage advice, do what you're told and nobody will get hurt. So there's an element of that. But for the monastic life, you have your initial period of discernment also, which is the novitiate. And St. Benedict says there that... Do we stop?
Yeah, we'll pick this up on the other side of the break. We're here in Hobart, Oklahoma at Clear Creek Monastery at the... Or Clear Creek Abbey at the... 8th Annual Catholic Man Show Camp Out. We'll be right back.
Adam, I don't know about you, but I am getting tired of giving my hard-earned money to companies that are paying for abortions or worse.
I know, man. The stuff that they're teaching our kids in school, that anti-Catholic bigotry, it's getting crazy what they're pushing on them. I really just would like to spend money without having to worry about supporting these type of people.
You know, that's where Catholic-owned comes in. Finally, it's a way to shop with businesses that share all of our values.
Wait, hold on. What exactly is Catholic-owned?
Oh, it's the app that finds tons of authentically Catholic-owned businesses from across the country. And finally, you can feel good about where your money is going. They've got local and national companies, goods and services, and they're adding more every day.
Man, I got to check this out. Where can I find them?
For sure. You can download the Catholic-owned app today and join us in building the new Catholic economy. Just use referral code CATHOLICMAN at sign up.
Is that CATHOLICMAN all one word?
All one word, CATHOLICMAN.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. Special guest today, Father Nesbitt. Father Brother Nesbitt.
Or Brother yes. Father Nesbitt.
Yep. Either one. Zealoter.
Yes.
Which is a sweet title.
Yeah, from the word zeal. Inspiring or sometimes imposing zeal.
Ooh, I will now impose zeal upon you. This is not gonna be fun for you, yes. But you will like it.
Yeah, you will be thankful later.
Yes. So you were just talking about on the other side, before our break about, you know, entering the monastery, and how maybe it's different from marriage expectations versus, you know, the way it actually turns out. So just pick up what
yes,
you were saying.
Yeah. The part of the novitiate formation is to dispel any of those. Kind of, I guess, illusions. So disillusionment, you know, it's your false perception, you know, according to your subjective tastes or likes or, you know, whatever. And so part of that is in the rule itself, St. Benedict says that the novice should be told all the hard and kind of painful things he'll have to go through. So he knows up front that it's not just a life of... ease. You know, it is a life of leisure, but it's a negotissimum otium, I think St. Bernard says, which is a most busy or whatever leisure. So it's a kind of a, there's a lot of active work to do to grow in the virtues, fraternal charity, patience, and all these things before you can really sink roots down in the contemplative life and the life of the liturgy and prayer. So that's part of the formation, kind of telling them that there's going to be hard things, there's going to be things you don't like, and that's part of the life. And so you kind of have that right up front. And so there are people, I mean, it can happen that you would enter that first phase with these ideals, and then if they are suddenly popped or blown away, then you would get sad and want to leave because it no longer corresponds to what you thought. But I mean, that's kind of the sign of vocation, that it's not because you like it, because it fits with you, but it's what God's will is, and you're seeking that. And so you kind of have something to keep you going and persevere. Whereas if it's just based on your ideas, then yes, you'll just give up and go do something else which pleases you more. So in a way, maybe there's a similar to marriage. If you've made that vow before God of a lifetime commitment, well, then it's just, you have to man up, as it were, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, that is similar to marriage in that if you have prepared yourself well, then you will have fewer illusions, yes, about what married life will be.
And I guess you also might not know specifically, but you know there will be kind of trials, difficulties, and part of the growth in marriage and that relationship with somebody and then in sanctity is going to be bearing those trials, you know, growing in them. So there is a similar aspect. You'll be told there'll be difficult things, but you won't really probably expect the difficult thing that comes at you, you know, and you have to deal with.
What was one thing that, like, when you first, you were entering into the novitiate that you thought was going to be part of, like, the monastic life that you've maybe either matured and, like, it is no longer something that, you know, is part of it, or that it was shocking to you that you thought, this is how we're going to live a monk life, and then you got into it and you realized, oh, yeah, that idea is not how you... reality.
Like, praying is hard.
Yeah, I guess maybe a common false perception, or maybe one I had as well, you know, pretty soon you'll be just really, really holy, and you won't have distractions, you won't have temptations, and you'll just be, you know, in heaven. So, you know, and then you realize after, you know, a couple years and years, no, it doesn't work that way. You kind of see more clearly the sins and wounds and things wrong with you, and so, you know, there's kind of like a, almost like you're going backwards or something, but that's part of the spiritual life too. You can see more clearly because of the light of God where you fail in your love for God. So but again, if you have that structure and that doctrine of what the monastic life is based on the church's teaching, the saints' teaching, then you won't be too surprised, and you won't, you know, turn back.
Mm-hmm. Is there something that, is it hard to, I could imagine you, like, you want to be the best monk that God is calling you to be, and sometimes you, yeah, like, I could see, for me, I would want to, like, maybe either add more things to, mm-hmm, like, yeah, to maybe more penances, or more prayers, or, like, I want to be the last one in the chapel, or I want to be the last, yeah, one, you know, saying, like, is it hard to temper that and, like, discern whether or not, is this actually what I'm supposed to do, or is this pride that I'm just having to combat?
Yeah, well, that's part of why you have an initial formation also with your novice master, spiritual director, to kind of keep you in check, because most of those, you do need to have a good zeal, you need to have a kind of effort and a manliness. Otherwise, you know, you don't have a family that you have to provide for. You don't have these external obligations that are going to spur other people. You know, most people will be spurred on by those. So you do need to have that kind of fire impetus. But it often is pride when it's like, well, I want to be better than other monks, you know, or something like that. And then God will easily disillusion you from that when, you know, you get sick or you can't do that, or your superior tells you no, and so there's a lot of built-in kind of checks for that attitude in the cenobitic life, the calm life that we have, as opposed to a, you know, the life of a hermit, or where you're a little more on your own.
Is it ever difficult as you know, you're pursuing holiness? Like, if you ever have a realization that, like, maybe I'm just not called to a specific, not a, not like, oh, I'm not supposed to be that holy, but like maybe a specific kind of holiness that you desire, and then you like, I don't know, is that, does that happen? Like, oh, you know, I really want it to be something like, you know, like something very awesome and holy, and maybe that's just not what I'm, that's not how I fit in the puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there is, you got to realize, yes, your place in the monastery, your place in God's plan, which might not be the one you thought of. You know, I can think of examples where if you enter a missionary order or something like that, and then you are now assigned to do the fundraising or the administration, you know, you kind of think, this is what I, how am I going to get holy doing this? So, I mean, there can be that. But the monastery is kind of clear and laid out. You're doing this, and you're doing it for God. And so whether you're sweeping the floors or you're, you know, talking on the Catholic Man show, you should be doing the will of God and pursuing holiness in whatever way, you know, obedience demands. So, yes.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people who may listen to the show. We have a lot of non-Catholics that listen to the show. We have even, you know, agnostics and atheists that listen to this show. And the concept of the monastic life could seem very foreign to them, right? To where it's like, well, what is the purpose of the monastic life? You know, and in America, a lot of times we think of it in a utilitarian sense, right? Like, well, what are you producing? You know, what is your worth? And that's how you value, like, what you do based off of what you're producing. But the monastic life is a little different in that way, right?
Yes. Yeah. The monastic life traditionally is a contemplative life, which means it's centered on a life of prayer and not one of active works like administering the parish or preaching or evangelizing, although those have found their place in the Benedictine life over the years. But yeah, the purpose of monastic life is the purpose of every Christian's life, which is to, you know, be made according to the image of Jesus Christ and attain union with God, attain heaven, get to heaven. So it's just taking kind of the essential that we're given in baptism, the divine life, and developing that in a very precise and consistent way. So the purpose of monastic life is the purpose of everybody's life, you know, when it comes down to it. And so that's one of the great witnesses of monastic life, just reminding people that the primary end is God, you know, and, you know, all that other stuff is temporary and should be ordered to God. So it should be, in a way, somewhat of a scandal to the world and something incomprehensible that there are these men who don't do anything in terms of production, it seems like, or works, even though some might write books or we might make pottery and things to support our life. But yeah, that's just the nature of monastic life, is to show forth that singular pursuit of God. And everybody's eventually going to be, should be pursuing that, you know, and getting to that. Marriage is the image of, you know, the union of God and his church, Christ and the soul. And so eventually that, too, is a means to that end. You know, it's not the end of life.
I had the opportunity to have lunch with the brother monks yesterday, and you were, one of the monks was chanting the homilies, some of the homilies from Bishop Slattery.
Yes, yeah.
Talking about, you know, the idea of a monk. Mm-hmm. And I thought he wrote very, very eloquently.
Yes. Definitely, yeah, you definitely did. So if you're thinking to yourself, yeah, what is this monastic life about? Well, we read the homily of Bishop Slattery that he gave on the inauguration, February 11, 2000, and then the one he gave for the when we became an abbey, 2010. So both express very well that fundamental purpose and nature of the monastic life.
Yes. Okay, I want to keep talking about this. We got a break. We got to take. This is the Catholic Man Show. We'll be right back.
Hey, Hey, guys, I just want to say thank you to everyone who joined us on St. Michael's Lent through the Exodus 90 reflections of the Book of Tobit. It was so great. It was so amazing to get to do that 2 a.m. vigil at our camp out with all those guys.
Yeah, the very end is really cool. It was the last one.
It was a great way to end the...
Put a bow on it, yeah.
End of the reflections, yeah. And I want to invite you to join us in our October challenge. Exodus 90 is the number one Catholic men's app to help you become the man that you were created to be. On our October challenge, it's a 30-day retreat through the book of Sirach, focusing on growing as men of wisdom and peace.
That's right, man. And how much do we need wisdom and peace right now, especially during the election season? Like, this is very, like, important at this time. So in this adventure, we're going to turn to the example of Blessed Karl of Austria. He's a saintly layman who worked tirelessly for peace. In a broken world who needs a few good men who will rise up and lead, become one of them. So download the Exodus 90 app today. Go to download.exodus90.com. 14-day free trial. That's download.exodus90.com. We also, in the app, we were able to interview Archduke Christian of Austria, which is Blessed Karl's grandson, which was epic.
Very cool.
All right, exodus90.com. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show out here in Hobart, Oklahoma at Clear Creek Abbey for the 8th Catholic Man Show camp out. We're talking with Father Nesbitt. All right, thank you guys. There are people here, I promise. Father, it seems like, you know, the Benedictine rule, like the seventh rule of St. Benedict talking about humility. I learned that from Father Bachman just a few minutes ago as he gave his talk. Humility plays a huge role in the Christian life overall.
I'm also very humble.
His humility is actually known worldwide.
Great.
Yeah. He has actually a big trophy that he has right in the very front of his office.
He's building a really nice display case for it.
Yeah.
You should be able to see the trophy from the street once I'm done.
Okay, good. Yeah. Maybe we'll take a look sometime.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
So how is the growth in humility in relationship to the maturity of the growth in the spiritual life? I can see that obviously playing a big role, because the perception of what the monastic life is versus what the reality ends up being, the perception of what marriage is versus what it really is, humility has to play a huge role there.
Oh, yeah. Because it means you have to accept you were wrong, you know, and take from somebody
else. Some people are.
Other people, maybe not.
Right.
Yeah, sure. I mean,
hypothetically speaking.
You were wrong and it's your fault. That's now you have to change and get some different notions. And St. Benedict too, the way the monks go to God is not only the liturgy, but then also obedience. He wants obedience to be a central virtue in the monastic life, which is founded on humility. Humility is kind of the general, and then obedience more specific. And that is a way of imitating Christ, who, even though he's God, you know, emptied himself, became man. And then even then he says that he came to do the will of his Father, not his own will. So it's just one of the ways in which you can more perfectly imitate Christ. And, you know, if you compare yourself to God, that's where humility comes in. Humility doesn't come in comparing yourself to your neighbor or somebody next to you. You're better than this guy or you're not, or whatever. It comes to fundamentally comparing yourself to God, who is a creator. He's infinite. So with respect to him, you are like nothing. And so if you have that attitude, then it's very, you'll progress, you know, in the spiritual life, because then you're ready to receive whatever God wants to give you. You're not crowded up with your own plans and ideas, and so that's important.
So what about the monastic life helps you do that, like empty yourself and have what is it about the rule and the way of life that assists the monk in achieving humility?
Yes, the main one would be obedience. You have to do what you're told. You don't have your own initiatives in a in most matters. So just submitting to the judgment of another, doing the job he tells you to do, not the one you like or the one you think you're good at, or you the one you think would better benefit the monastery. So there's just kind of that structure of obedience, which in Benedictine life is particularly strong. Other religious orders, like the Franciscans, will all religious take the vow of obedience, but the Franciscans would emphasize poverty a little more, you'd say. But fundamentally for Benedictines, obedience. And so just that daily kind of doing what you've been assigned, you know, as the manifestation of God's will in the concrete moment of your life is something that will build humility, because you're continually, not pursuing your own ideas and perceptions. And
do you find that that gives you a sense of freedom?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about the evangelical councils, the poverty, chastity, and obedience, and each one of them seem like they bring an element of freedom. Okay, like when we were in lunch, you know, I'm sitting here looking at all these monks who own nothing. You all have given up all worldly possessions. Yeah. And at the same time, you seem very rich.
Yeah.
You have everything that you need. Yeah. You know, like all of your meals are provided. Do you find that those things which seem like oppressive, poverty, chastity, and obedience, do you find that they each do like bring more riches or more freedom than they?
Yes, that's the point. You know, again, it's like if you're aiming for the essential, if you're aiming for God, well, then they are the most efficacious means to attaining that. So they're freeing you from attachments that could otherwise retard your progress in the spiritual life, you know, prevent you from loving God as much as you can. So that's their purpose. You're renouncing goods, which can lawfully be used, but we often don't, you know, and there's a kind of excess in them. And so you just cut them out, give it over to God, and then that leaves you free to do his will, and you're not going to be worried about your material possessions, your stocks or whatever, or, you know, the stock market going up or down. And then there's the promise of Christ when Peter says, you know, we've left everything, you know, what do we get? And then he says, well, you get 100-fold. So there is a kind of, even in this life, there is a certain reward, like you're saying. A monk personally doesn't own anything. He has no personal property, but he's provided with everything that he needs. And that suffices to relieve his mind also from a certain care of obtaining those things, acquiring those things. Is it good enough or not? And then just pursuing sanctity.
How do you leisure? Like if leisure, if the highest form of leisure is the mass, outside of worship, like what does leisure look like for a monk?
Yeah, I guess that fundamental character of leisure that the monastic life has, if we're talking about that, it is mainly Lectio Divina, the prayerful reading of scripture, spiritual reading, sometimes study. So the leisure, that is your kind of, you have a lot of your means taken care of, as we were saying. Some of the brothers cook, a lot of the brothers don't. So you just show up, eat your meal, and then you know, go on. So there is a leisure.
I do the same thing at home.
Good. I mean, yeah. You can. So if we're speaking in that sense, then it is a leisure for prayer. But then just as, you know, being men with a human nature, a body and soul, you do have to have some more recreational leisure. And that is had by just kind of conversing with brothers freely and walking around. That's a specific time every day, usually 30, half an hour to an hour after the meal. That's kind of our recreation. And sometimes some monks will play some sports, but it's mainly just kind of walking, conversing. Outside of that, there's really not kind of a free time or leisure time in the sense of just kind of, in modern language, chilling or hanging out or something. You just, you have your very kind of strict schedule, and it's,
What are those conversations like? You guys are like walking around, like, are you like, talking about theology and like philosophical aspects of things? Like, or are you guys like talking about like what somebody cooked the other day and how terrible it was, or like, or how great it was? Like,
we have very good cooks, so I don't know if I've complained too much about the food. Sometimes we get some weird things. You might say that was kind of weird, but trying to think of an example of that. But persimmons, we have lots of persimmons. And a lot of people don't really like to eat the mashed up persimmons, so then at some point they'll like cook them into some sort of bar, and then they'll come out in the meal as like the dessert part, and you just have to eat it. So it's a little bit weird.
But what are some of the other conversations? Like, what do you converse with your brothers during leisure time? Like, what are some of the things that you guys do? Talk about sports? Do you talk about like?
I mean, a little bit sports, but our of course input is very limited, so we don't really know. Like right now, I don't really know anything about sports. I think, we heard about the Olympics, so
it happened.
Maybe America won. I don't know.
We always win.
Okay. Yeah. So it's just anything, you know, just because part of it is that relaxation. It's not, the purpose isn't precisely edification or kind of a spiritual uplifting. The purpose is just kind of a bodily and mental relaxation. And there's a story of St. John, the evangelist, who, you know, probably had the highest, you know, kind of contemplation and thoughts that mortal men can have writing his gospel. And he would play with a little bird. And they said, what are you doing playing with that bird? And he's like, well, some boy asked him that. And I think he said, well, what about your bow there? He was going a bow and arrow. He says, do you unstring that bow? And he says, yes. And he says, why? Because otherwise it'll, like, the string will, you know, lose its tension and not be able to do his job. So there is just kind of human need of relaxation. So it doesn't preclude theological or philosophical conversations or spiritual or about the saints, and that does happen, but it's just all over, ranging all over.
Do you have a favorite like thing to do? Like, do you have something that you do other than walking? Like, oh, I really like it in to do whatever. Like, in a certain time of year? No. It looks like a no.
I'm just trying to think. No.
Okay.
I guess no. There are things I enjoy. I mean, I don't know, walking around in the woods and seeing the colors of the trees.
So you told me something the other day about the conclusion of the novitiate. And about like what you do with the monks as they are moving out of the novitiate. Would you be willing to tell about that on the other side of the break?
We'll say something about that.
Okay, yeah. Good. Okay, good.
All right, we'll be right back. Probably not.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're joined by Brother Nesbitt, the one of the guest masters as well,
yes.
Here at
yep.
Clear Creek Abbey. So if you send an email and you get one back, it might be from Brother Nesbitt.
Could be, if Father Bachman's not here or something like that. But yeah, I do man the guest house.
Mm-hmm.
Help man the guest house.
So I don't want to like get into any, you know, secret ceremonies or anything.
Any.
Not that there are any,
but if there were.
So at the end, of the novitiate.
Yeah, you've novitiate lasts 4 to 5 years, and in all religious orders, the novitiates are separated from the community, so they can focus on their formation, and you know, acquire good habits. And so at the end of that, you leave the novitiate, go live in a different part of the building, you join the others, you start your theology studies. So at the end, yeah, you just kind of, there's a little parting, I don't know what you want to call it, but it does involve usually a roast, you know, of some sort to help brothers grow in humility, you know, mm-hmm. just
They got a...
And fraternity. It sounds like it's probably good for fraternity.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you really love your brother, you're on good terms with him, well, you can make fun of him.
Right? Yeah.
You don't make fun of people you really don't like or are scared of or something, you know? So it's it is part of fraternal charity, just being able to joke a little bit with one another. So that happens on recreation, too. We're not walking around talking. It might happen a little bit. As long as it's not, you know, mean-spirited and trying to cut him down or make him sad or something. Yeah. But,
What do you enjoy reading from a, like, from a spiritual aspect? Like, who are you drawn to, Saint Wise? Who like, is important in your spiritual life that you kind of become a disciple of?
Well, one would be Saint Therese of Lisieux. She's the patroness of the novitiate. And again, kind of the humility, walking the little way, and confidence in God, because you're not going to get far in your own strength. So it's very important to realize that. So that is one. Another one would be St. Gertrude. She was a 13th century Cistercian nun and mystic. And so she was has a lot of good writings that often center around the different feast days and things happening in the liturgy. So it's very kind of monastic type of spirituality. Dom Blessed Columba Marmion, he was a monk in Belgium. He was an Irish monk who entered a monastery in Belgium in the turn of the 20th century. And so he gets, he also taught theology, so he knew St. Thomas well, so he's a little more maybe dogmatic or doctrinally based spiritual teaching for specifically monks. One of his books is Christ's Ideal of the Monk. He has Christ's Ideal of the Priest. And he has Christ's Life of the Soul for all the faithful, just, you know, the Christian life we all live in virtue of our baptism. So he's a author I profit from and like to read. And so those are, very similar to our kind of monastic background.
And do you get, I mean, I know that you can have a devotion to whoever you want to have a devotion to, but like, are you not required? That's not the right word, but are like, do you guys have as a community, as part maybe part of obedience, that's like, no, we will do like these private, like this is a private devotion, but I want you to do it, or
I mean, really, the rosary almost doesn't fall in that category, but that would be an example where yes, you're required to say the rosary.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, is, you know, kind of the highest of all the devotions. Stations of the Cross, making the way of the cross every week, another one. And other than that, I mean, there isn't really, we try to focus our prayer and spiritual life on the liturgy, so we don't impose or multiply too many other devotions. Devotion to the Sacred Heart, we kind of append to every first Friday after Vespers, have benediction and some hymns in honor of the Sacred Heart. And so there, and then, I mean, there is a Feast of the Sacred Heart. There's a Feast of the Immaculate Heart. I guess another one would be, that's part of the formation, would be consecration to Mary, according to Louis de Montfort. So everybody has to read the true devotion and then make that consecration. And usually it's on the day you make profession.
Oh, okay.
Your first profession. So those.
So you don't wait to a Marian feast day. You just do it on the.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But our professions are often on a Marian feast day.
Okay.
So we're the Abbey of Our Lady of the Annunciation. So it's just kind of part of our, you know, spiritual environment, you know, at home, that it's has a devotion to Our Lady. So that is a very strong element in our, the way we live Benedictine life.
What it, so you dedicate a lot of time to prayer, like at least a third of the day into prayer, right?
I mean, roughly? Yeah, you have 8 of the offices and mass twice a day and rosary, personal prayer, and then lectio divina, yeah.
Right, so for a layman who does not have that time, that type of time, and it's not his vocation to have that much time,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's hard listening to that. It's like, wow, that's a little overwhelming. You know, it sounds it's a lot, you know, right? And so it's very hard sometimes for us to really make that, like, have that time in prayer, mm-hmm. on a regular basis, an ordered basis, like the Benedictine order, right? So what would you, what would your suggestion on guys who are trying to start to have an ordered prayer life, or are getting hung up and just can't seem to get past that initial hump of starting prayer life?
Yeah. So I guess one thing would be, not to get discouraged. One thing St. Teresa of Avila says, who's very important, you know, for learning prayer, the prayer life, is that what you need to do is pray and never quit. Whatever happens, that's it. Like, just pray and never stop in terms of, you know, giving it up and just stop praying, not like you're praying all day, all the time. But, and so beginning an ordered prayer life, you know, I guess would be realizing the importance of that and the motives. So a lot of the saints will talk about that. St. Alfonso Liguori has a whole book on, you know, prayer, the necessary means of salvation, basically saying, all those who are in hell because they didn't pray. And those who are in heaven because they did pray. So realizing that and then making the effort, and ordered is a good word, ordered prayer life, so that you have, you know, some set time in your schedule for prayer. If you really really intend to begin and live a prayer life, well, that should be a priority. How do you get your priorities done? Well, you put them, you know, in your schedule. You don't say, I'll do it when I have time. You know, you just make it. So, and often, if you really want to do it, the best time is early in the morning, or at least maybe not 4:50, but when you first get up, because then other things start happening and you don't have that time, you can't get it back. So just doesn't have to be right up, but, you know, just starting with something like the rosary also. It's kind of a school of prayer. You have the vocal prayers, you have the meditation, you have your attention to God. So it kind of includes all the forms of prayer and is very structured itself, you know, finite, you know, very clear beginning and end. And so that's a very good devotion to begin with. And then finding a time where you can give that 15 or 20 minutes to God with the help of Our Lady. So that's what I'd say. Anybody who wants to begin a prayer life would begin saying the five decades, you know, whole rosary would be 15 or 20, but to have the five decade rosary every day somewhere.
So Father, in my own prayer life, sometimes I feel like it's overly structured, you know, where I feel like it's repetitive and I can kind of lose the fervor, or, you know, just, oh, I just am saying these prayers and I don't even pay attention. And I can only imagine what that's like for you. Having just an ultra structured prayer life. What do you do to like stop it from just being habitual and repetitive and actually like praying? What do you do?
I don't know.
Just like try hard.
But that is a danger. Yeah. When you pray a large part of the day and you have lots of structured prayers like the Psalms or whatever. Yeah. So, what do you do? I mean, there's no trip or, you know, trick, or, well, I guess nowadays they call it a hack. I can't give you a hack.
There's no hacks, huh?
Right. No.
I was really looking for one.
the idea of prayer, right, is to build and grow in a relationship with God, right? And so I guess, like, a lot of times you can easily say, like, I'm saying these words and I'm not really, like, I don't feel like I'm growing in a relationship with our Lord. I'm just doing these things kind of robotically or habitually.
Yeah. I mean, that would be kind of bad, but the rosary is in a way repetitive or liturgy. So one way is to kind of renew those outside of that structure, you know, reflect on why you're using that structure. What about these meditations, or what do these psalms mean? So kind of stepping outside of that structure to get a view of how do they help me grow closer to God? What do they mean? And the other one is just realizing, well, it pleases our Lord, it pleases our Lady, they like it, I'm going to do it for them. And then even if you don't have any nice thoughts or something, you know, you're doing something for them with attention. But you can't be a robot, you can't just like rattle off without thinking about it. And that does happen. I mean, that's just part of being a rational creature. Your mind is moving from different thoughts to different thoughts. And there's also the funny story that, I don't know if it came from St. Bernard or Bishop Sheen. He said this guy told him, "Oh, I can pray without distractions." He said, "Really? Why don't you say one Our Father for me?" And so in the middle of the Our Father, "And if you do, I'll give you this horse." And he said, he starts saying it. And at the end, in the middle, he says, "Does it include the saddle?" And then he goes on. So, I mean, it's just...
Okay, Father, we have to get you back so that way you can hit Liturgy of the Hours. We appreciate you so much. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.